This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Stephen Jaffe comes from a musical family. At home, his dad composed, his mom sang, but as children, his parents forbade him and his siblings from pursuing careers in music. And that, as you might expect, meant that all three are now professional musicians. Stephen is a composer of contemporary classical music and a professor of the music department at Duke University, and this year was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters, one of the highest honors an artist can receive in this country. Stephen Jaffe, welcome to The State of Things.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
And congratulations. That's such great news.
Thank you. Thank you.
So you started playing violin at the age of 6, piano by 11, guitar at 13, and then your parents, your siblings are all playing music, but they tell you not to pursue. Did they tell you this very early on? You can play, but
yeah, they were worried that we couldn't make a living. And, you know, I'm a parent too. I have two daughters and, you know, you worry about them. Of course.
You want your kids to make a living. Do you think it was just a trick just to make you play
harder?
Oh,
no. No, it was absolutely not a trick. No, I've thought about that. There's, you know, my wife's a psychiatrist, Mindy Oshrain, also a very artistic person. But at various points I've encountered literature that's, you know, in her field, and one of them is The Drama of the Gifted Child by Alice Miller, and that's basically about our, you know, I think it's psychoanalytic theory if you're living out your parents' unconscious desires and so on. Who knows?
Who knows? But you don't. Well, did you feel drawn to music yourself? I mean, were you right from the first?
It's just I can remember how mysterious and beautiful music sounded. You know, to hear it coming from a speaker, to hear it coming from downstairs where it was being played with real attention. All kinds of music: show music, religious music, music on a radio. It was just great. It was really great.
Entertaining and beautiful for you, or did you always want to get under the hood and see how it was made?
I don't know. I just remember always playing music, really. Mm-hmm. That's what. And then when I had a chance to hear orchestras or to hear concerts and again, all kinds of music. I also played a lot of music in bands. I played guitar, you know, played with a Fender Dual Showman turned up to 12, and my ears are suffering for it now. Yeah. And all of that. So, my brother's a great jazz pianist and composer, and my sister's an oboist. And so, you know, I hear lots of music, lots of different kinds of music.
When did you decide to compose or become interested in composing?
Well, I thought it was when I was about 13 or 14, but I after my parents died, we found a lot of papers and so on. So it was evident that I was doing stuff earlier than that. But
were they songs or were they compositions in many parts? Do you know early on? You can make it up. It's your story. Tell me whatever you want.
What I remember was that just coming across this piece that was called The Malay Dance Song for Fast Piano. And I haven't figured out what a fast piano is yet, but I sure want to compose something again now for a fast piano. That sounds cool.
Go back and reprise that. Well, let's listen to one of your more recent compositions. This one is called a section from Poetry of the Piedmont.
Thank you.
There's just a little section from Stephen Jaffe's Poetry of the Piedmont. Stephen Jaffe, who just was elected to the American Academy of Arts and Letters, teaches music composition at Duke. So the bird we heard, what is that?
Well, actually, there are two species of chickadees that I don't know the scientific term. They're both native to North Carolina, and they interbreed. One is called the black-capped chickadee, and it sounds, I don't know if you can hear that, like that, with two notes falling. Can you hear dee-da? And the second part of it, that's the song, and here's the call, chickadee-dee-dee-dee-dee, which gets its name. And here's the Carolina chickadee, which we have around here, which is a little different. And it also ends with chickadee dee dee dee. So essentially, what I did was, through computer technology now, you can use any sound and so on. So I made a little, this is what I'm playing here, is a laptop sampler that a percussionist can play as a member of the orchestra, and it comes in on cue. It's just another instrument, like you're adding, you might add a high E flat clarinet, a little tiny clarinet, or you might add a guitar or a mandolin, and so on. The orchestra is a mechanism that's evolving, and so with sampling now we can add these instruments into a live orchestra. And what I liked about this piece was the notion that the call of the chickadee, this dee-dum, dee-dum, this, and so on, links to a theme, which is dee-da, 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 dee-da-dum, and so on. And then it keeps dee-da, dee-da-da-dum. It links to the pentatonic scale. It links to a lot of music cultures that have been that are active in North Carolina, a lot of gospel music, a lot of mountain music, and so on, have that kind of scale in it, and so on. Yet I also wanted to think about the notion of the mysterious powers of birds, who don't sing in quantifiable rhythm. They sing chickadee dee 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 dee, and so on. They don't sing in four beats and two beats, mm-hmm. and so on.
And if you listen over time, when you thought you had it down, by the sixth or seventh one out, they mess you up.
That's
again.
Right.
So and you can't
different.
Dance to a bird.
It's different every time. I also like this notion that there are small this symbolism, if you like, of a bird that was small black and white birds, one northern, one southern, whose name is Native American, but who are on the land before the Cherokee.
Do you have a sense, when you compose a piece like this, you're walking around, you hear the chickadee, and you say, oh, there's a theme. I think I'll compose a piece. I mean, which came first in this case?
Well,
the chickadee or the egg? Sorry.
The chickadee. I heard it. My friends, the Borromeo Quartet, were in town this weekend and played a performance of a different piece of mine, a string quartet. And Nicholas Kitchen, who's from Durham and the first violinist of the Borromeo Quartet, told me that a story about that he had asked the composer, famous Polish composer Witold Ludosławski, says, how do you know when you have a piece? And Ludosławski said, I know I have a piece when I have a small idea and a big idea. And that's something like that. The way the creative process works is so mysterious. You can't teach it.
Well, what was the small idea, though? Listen, these birds are interesting. I'm going to go listen for that sound and work it in. Or did the sound kind of grab?
No, it's really like parallel processes. You might be working on it's hard to believe, but you just have to learn to trust it. Basically, I might be working on a musical theme, and I might be working, and I might have been listening to a bird song or a bird record, and I just realized that it's a shock of recognition that these both belong to the same thing, and it's not so much not so contrived. It's something that's that goes together.
It's organic really, in a
it's,
way.
It's organic. I really believe in that. That you have to go to you can't write music by contriving it. You have to allow delving into the process and letting the process help you.
But there has to be some kind of cultivation. For you to know that there's a process, a product, some template against which you
have to work.
Trained and cultivated.
Of course it's trained and cultivated. But one of the things I tell my students is the difference between me and you is that I've experienced that terror about 75 or 80 times.
The terror of
not knowing what in the world that you're doing. You know, it's like you have certain ideas, you have small ideas, you may even have big ideas, you may have a deadline, you may have, you know, all kinds of reasons to write something, and then you just don't know how it will go together. But you have to trust that, in fact, there is a sense of wholeness.
Are there fragments that you've had that have been put aside and then used in ways in other pieces?
Sure. And there are also fragments that just never make it. I mean, if you would go, you know, some composers, Claude Debussy was one, you know, there are more unfinished fragments than there are finished pieces by far. And I think that's, that has something to do with how you, when they're needed and things like that. I mean,
you talked about the sampling that you used in this piece, so your percussionist is going to actually hit a key on a laptop. Is, you know, modern technology making acoustic instruments obsolete?
No.
And should we care?
Well, I'll tell you what. While most of the music that you hear now, I would say 95% is recorded sound, it's not always the same as in a live performance. You know, I go to concerts, all different kinds of music, and the look, I know I've done something right when I see the look on an audience member's face, you know, in a particularly beautiful moment. They're completely enraptured. They're attentive, and their faces mean that the music is touching them. I think probably we'll find out someday that there's, you know, maybe in the next 100 years we'll find out that live performance really does involve the audience in a way that can be quantified. But we don't know it now. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with recording, actually, because, you know, one thing that happens when they record your music is that you can record it and then they can put it, there are programs that they can put it in any concert hall in the world. So they want to put you in the Berlin Philharmonic Concert Hall or Carnegie Hall or something. That's all done later. And that's really interesting, but it's not the same as a place where one is present in the hall and hearing a musician give a message and whatever that message is.
But you could be live and still use electronically rendered sound.
Oh, sure.
And have a whole orchestra full of people playing various laptops at various times.
Oh, yeah. There are laptop orchestras. Yeah. There's a student at Duke have them. The Princeton has one. It's called PLORC, the Princeton Laptop Orchestra. That's a real field of real interest now. I've used them in pieces like I wrote a piece for the North Carolina Symphony, which had to do with Spanish music of the Renaissance, and one of the things I wanted to do was to hear the acoustic of the places where that music was first sung. So I went to Toledo, and I sampled it, the sounds, recorded them, and actually in that piece, as part of the piece, you can hear tourists milling about and people singing the mass distantly, and that was the actual place where some of the Renaissance music, which I was using in the piece, originated, were first performed. That's kind of amazing.
Where are the audiences for that? The question is kind of what's the future of serious composition these days?
Oh, the future is just wide open. It's whatever anybody makes it. Just stay open and it'll be there. You have to keep educating people and you have to have portals like radio. I wish radio would play more music. I wish every child in North Carolina could hear a symphony orchestra and see if I could see. You know, I've had the National Symphony played a piece of mine on tour in 2005. They played, you know, a tour throughout North Carolina, and it was just amazing to see the faces of school children in this. And North Carolina Symphony, those musicians spend, God bless them, they spend a lot of time on the bus going here, going there, and every single appearance they make is worth it. That's, I mean, to have a child hear that, what live music is like is incalculable.
Do they have to know that they can make this music and that some of the stuff that they're already familiar with, digital technology, is they're already doing some of it?
Yeah, well, they can, you know, you learn it little by little and so on. You know, there's, it's a whole long story about music education. You know, the wonderful El Sistema that's taking place in Venezuela, and of which we have in Durham now
here in Durham,
with
right.
Kids Notes, is just a terrific thing. And, you know, if you want people to learn about teamwork, there's no better way than to have them learn together, how to play music together.
Stephen, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on
You're
the program.
You're welcome.
Stephen's composition is going to be performed tonight. Vocalist Jacqueline Horner is going to be there. Stephen Jaffe is my guest this hour. So the performance and the music tonight is a recital. It is free. It is open to the public at 7:30 at the Nelson Music Room at Duke University. Thanks for listening to our program. That's the state of things for today. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.